And it's a Wednesday, which means on a Wednesday in the second hour, we bring you a masterclass. And I'm curious about some of the topics that have your mind intrigued. So please send those through to us at zania@702.co.za. And what we do is that we spend the hour immersing ourselves in a particular topic. And we get to the person who's done the so-called, the proverbial metaphorical 10,000 hours in a particular discipline. And we kind of get as much as we can from them in that hour. So it's a shortcut. It's a little bit of a hack. So whatever topics you feel are worthy of a masterclass, we welcome your suggestions. Zania@702.co.za. Today's one is a little bit of a self-serving masterclass. Because from the minute we were told about Nedbank Business Ignite and how it's going to assist businesses, we thought, okay, we have our own questions, our own curiosities around incubation. So why not turn that into a masterclass? So just to give you a brief background into this initiative, you know what's happening in our economy. I mean, we talk about it all the time because that it's something, it's the economy, stupid, as I think it was Bill Clinton who said that, or one of his aides, in fact, said that all those years ago. And this could be, if our economy improves, it could be the game changer. But for the economy to improve, we need businesses to employ people. We need sustainable businesses and industries that flourish, that will create this employment. Unemployment rate rose to 27.6% in the first quarter of 2019. And that was from 27.1% in the previous period. And there is a lack of confidence in the marketplace. Lots of businesses are in trouble at the moment, not able to sustain themselves or even create the much needed employment. All you have to do is walk around in different malls. I mean, look at Hyde Park, look at places like Sandton, you look at high streets, you look at smaller shopping centers, and it's not a picture that says things are flourishing. You just have to look beyond the veneer of what looks like it may look on the surface like things are being held together. But underneath that, there is great source of concern. So as Nedbank and 702, we've decided to do our part in not only giving this platform to businesses that need the publicity, businesses that maybe you, whose services you could use, and businesses that could go on to create employment, but to also contribute in improving the economy through Nedbank Business Ignite. So the campaign is a great one. There's a great prize to be won. And we will talk about those details in a short while. But in a summary, you will need to send us your details. You fill in a form on 702.co.za providing details about your business. And then our partner in this effort as well from Kaelo Business Hub, that's Tsepo Phakathi, him and his team alongside with Nedbank and Prime Media will select businesses that would go into the incubation process. And this is a tailor-made incubation program. And you will also win airtime, an airtime package to the value of 200,000 Rand on 702 and Cape Talk. And so that time is fast approaching because during the week of the 24th of June until the 28th of June, selected entrepreneurs will be profiled on air. So you'll get to hear some of these businesses and the people that drive them. And then the finalists will be selected by business expert Tsepo Phakathi and his team at Kaelo Business Hub, and will be holding an event as well where the finalists will participate in a final judging process with representatives from Nedbank, Prime Media, as well as Kaelo Business Hub. And the winner will be announced on The Money Show that very evening on the 4th of July. So it's going to be an intense couple of weeks for all involved, but I'm so excited as someone who is in business as well. I think this could be the game changer for your business to ignite it, as the word suggests, into greatness. And with that, let's welcome Tsepo Phakathi, the man behind Phakathi Holdings and the founder of Kaelo Business Hub. You got on your feet for this. Hello.
So, top of the afternoon, Zania.
You prefer to be on your feet.
Yeah, absolutely.
What happens when you're sitting, resting?
Yeah, you know what? I get lazy. Mm-hmm. But listen, let me not get distracted. I think I must tell you that you absolutely contradict the phrase face for radio. You look ravishing and stunning today.
Thank you. Let's move on swiftly. I did not want to start in that tone, but let's move on swiftly.
Fantastic.
So you were one of the 200 Mail and Guardian's young people to watch in South Africa a couple of years ago.
Seems like almost a decade ago.
Yes, yes. And yeah. A lot has happened since. You're a serial entrepreneur. But beyond that, I want to know, who are you? Who's Tshepo Phakathi?
So, I mean, I shudder to answer that question all the time. But I think if I were to describe myself, I would describe myself as a quintessential workaholic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the thing that I'm known most to do is just work. I keep grinding. I keep working.
Yeah.
I have the disease that affects me, which is called serial entrepreneurship. So I just can't sit still.
Mm-hmm.
I want to start one venture after another. And I keep doing it. And I've been doing it for almost 20 years now.
Yeah.
So I enjoy the process of building businesses because it is a process. And it is something that you need to understand. It's methodical. So it's not something that you just do sporadically without good thought into
it. And we'll unpack that a little bit later. But 100%. Before we get there, I want you to take us to Mdeni in Soweto, which is where you grew up.
Yes.
And this
bug
started.
Yes.
Is it true that as a 6-year-old, you were already in business?
Yeah. Look, it's always exaggerated when the story is told. The truth is, a friend of mine, Uvusi, and I were just 2 6-year-olds. He was 8. I was 6. And at the time, there was something very popular called banana car in Soweto. So you'd have this car. This guy drives this car and he collects bottles to go and recycle them.
Yeah.
And he gives the children that give him these bottles some chips or popcorn and stuff like that. And one time, Vusi and I figured that this guy is taking these things to a recycle plant.
Uh-huh.
And we knew where the recycle plant was because Vusi's mom had bought a house near the plant. And on this one occasion, I was walking Vusi to his mother's house where we saw it.
Uh-huh.
So we walked in there, we saw this plant that were palletizing bottles, cans, etc. And Vusi and I thought, wow, this is amazing. And the guy that ran it said to us that, do you know if you bring me these recycled materials, i.e. rubbish,
mm-hmm.
I'll pay you for it. And we thought, this guy must be out of his mind. So we started then sort of hauling these things out of these massive bins that we used to have in the townships back in the days.
Those.
And took these things out from Mdeni and hauled them about 5 kilometers or thereabouts to Dobsonville and recycled the stuff. We made in those days 20 rand each a week. Or 80 rand a month.
What do you do
each
with that as a 6-7-year-old?
Can I tell you, it would be the 2019 equivalent of about 900 rand, 1,000 rand.
Impressive.
We were the richest 6-year-olds. I can tell you that much.
Impressive. And then you went on to study. What did you study? And you even went into tertiary quite young.
Yeah. So I was 16.
Mm.
I turned 16 in my first year in varsity. So I matriculated. It was one of those anomalies. I started school very early. Got promoted a few times. So finished school early as a result. And so it was before the government enacted this new law that says you have to go to school when you're 6 and whatnot. So I was very lucky that I got in before in the 80s, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to probably six schools, from Mdeni. It was Epleni, then went to Umkhathizwe in Thokoza, then Igagasi in Spreadview, then Task Academy in Mayfair, then eventually Riashuma High School in Soweto and Protea North, and then finished off at Highlands North Boys High School.
Right.
And thereafter decided that I didn't want to go to school. I just wanted to start. I was already running a small little thing. Then I wanted to just focus on that. But my parents won that tussle and said, listen, you will go to school.
That's how you ended up at Juju.
Yeah. They didn't actually have the money to pay for it. So I had to figure out how to actually pay for the school that they were forcing me to go to.
Mm-hmm.
So I started banking. Spent 3 years doing that and then took a sabbatical from education for 9 years. Just focused on really building businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And then decided that I wanted to do a BCom in economics and then did that. Did an honors after that and then did a master's degree. And I am now halfway through my PhD.
Wow. Yeah. And running businesses as well. Workaholic of notes, clearly then. So you've always been business minded. You started Phakathi Capital Empowerment, which was a corporate finance advisory company. But what do you recall as your struggles through those initial years in business?
It's very difficult to say because I had no reference, so I did not know if it had to be different. So for me, what I was going through was just the norm of running a business. So let me just take you back one step before that. So in the year 1999, I was invited to go on and join this construction company. This was pre the tender era, right? So people were starting businesses. Very few people. They tended to be older. And somebody said, listen, come join us. You seem like a young, smart boy. Come join us in this thing that we're doing. And I was very reluctant because I thought to myself, oh, construction, hard hats, safety boots, just not my sort of thing. I'm a Hugo Boss guy, right? So I want to sit in an air-conditioned office in a beautiful suit and do that.
Yeah.
And so I missed that opportunity. Those guys today are fabulously wealthy. And I kind of feel like, you know, I missed something there.
It wasn't but, for you. That's all that it means.
It wasn't for me. So I take it that wasn't my path.
Yeah.
And then I decided that, well, I wanted to explore other things. So with a group of friends, we tried to set up an entertainment business. And we organized an event.
Mm-hmm.
Back in those days, there was something called Horror Cafe.
Yeah.
It was in Newtown.
Yeah.
And we organized an event in Newtown. Now, we had a big fight with the friends because the event, they wanted to host it on a Thursday. And I said to them, look, we're not going to get a crowd. And our money was going to come through door takings. And there was a crowd of maybe 20 people
mm-hmm.
for the evening.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't make any money. We lost, in fact, I lost, I think, 2,000 Rand
mm-hmm.
In those days. I lost 2,000 Rand in that little investment I made. And I realized that these things are not for me. I don't want to be in entertainment. I don't want.
And
I
the Thursday nights ended up being popular.
And the Thursday nights ended up being popular. You know, we were just 10 years early. You know?
Okay. So but, what is for you then? Because as a serial entrepreneur, do you dabble in different industries or do you stick to a core industry?
So there's no core industry. I've been very industry agnostic.
All right.
So my approach has been, we make investment decisions based on potential returns.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at the returns and you think that this particular area is very lucrative or it's very conducive to go into at that point in time, and we've made investment decisions based on that.
Mm.
So the very first business that we then started was capital raising. It was the corporate finance business. Because I was studying banking, I learned a lot about investment banking and how to raise capital for businesses. And in those days, there was something called the GAUMEC, the Gauteng Manufacturing Advisory Centers. There
mm-hmm.
were four in Gauteng,
mm-hmm.
one in Tshwane, one in the Joburg CBD, one in Krugersdorp, and one in Germiston. And we were invited to come and try and help those businesses, mainly manufacturing concerns, to raise money. But in the process of helping them raise money, we started doing a lot of counseling of those businesses because we saw that there were all sorts of issues in terms of how they were structured. You know, you might think that the problem that you have today is money, but it might be not money.
Yes.
You know, so you want to expand this furniture manufacturing business you have. We raise the capital for you to expand it and you can't sell the stuff you produce out of that.
Precisely, which maybe let's get into the conversation about incubation, because often people would be struck by some kind of inspiration and so on. And they think that whatever their idea is what society needs, but it might not necessarily have a market. It might not have a consumer on the other side.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So typically, I caution people, caution entrepreneurs primarily against starting businesses for themselves. So if you start a business, what has typically happened, a friend of mine, give you a very good example. A friend of mine says to me, Tsepo, I want to make T-shirts.
Yeah.
And I want to make T-shirts. I want to go into clothing, but I want to start with T-shirts. And I asked him, what is the price point? And he said, it's about 1,000, 1,005. That's the price point. And
sure.
I said, but that's your market. That's you and your friends. You dress in 1,000 Rand, 1,500 Rand T-shirts. Mm. You and your friends.
Mm.
Now that market is maybe a market of 100 people. The truth is South Africa is a bottom of the pyramid kind of economy, where most of the action is happening at the bottom of the pyramid. So you want to be selling 100 Rand T-shirts, not 1,000 Rand T-shirts.
Exactly.
If you're trying to, in fact, the wealthiest South African 2 years ago was Christo Wiese. And look at what he owns.
Mm.
Pepco, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's Pep Stores, that's Ackermans, that's ShopRite. All the bottom of the pyramid businesses. So until you understand that principle that you cannot be starting businesses because you want to fulfill some sort of thing that you are curious or concerned about or that interests you. Business is independent of what you like and don't like, and it has to be that way. And then you have to see that there's a viable market in that space that you are interested in without you necessarily being the market.
Yes. So my product will solve ... X. And if you can't answer that, is it a question of stop there or go back to the drawing board?
Always go back to the drawing board, because you might not have clarity. Because the truth is, for most entrepreneurs, the amount of data or information you have is very limited. And I think research is a very difficult discipline. So I was saying to the team about a week ago in our management meeting, monthly management meeting, that the biggest problem that I've had in business, telling my team, has been that I've made decisions based on intuition.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very weak way of doing things, because your intuition is limited to your own experience, your
clouded.
Own knowledge. Yeah, absolutely. So you have to make decisions based on data. That's what big businesses do. You
are
want
you saying research is difficult, or are we just lazy to conduct research? Because that requires effort. Yeah. There are lots of things in running a business that are not sexy, that are not fun, that are laborious.
Yeah, absolutely. If you ask anyone doing a PhD, they'll tell you that research is difficult. But I think for purposes of business, it's just more the laziness than the difficulty,
exactly.
Because you're just looking for data, which is different. In a PhD, it's a very different discipline altogether. But for purposes of a business, you just need to go and find the data. And I think we don't have the discipline to discipline ourselves to go and look for the data and get good sources of data.
Yes.
So the big institutions have the discipline. They have people who are hired to go and get the data. Mm-hmm. And so they make decisions based on data.
No, truth is we're just in a rush to open our doors and trade and be able to say, I'm an entrepreneur.
Absolutely.
Instead of spending the months or even sometimes years.
Absolutely.
In gathering the kind of information that you need. And in those conversations, you'll get a lot of insights that you might not have considered about what you want to do.
Absolutely. And you have to be willing to change your mind. Mm-hmm. So you do a bit of research and you see that the direction of the research is such that it suggests that what you want to do is not viable.
Right.
Then you have to be willing to do a pivot.
Yeah.
To change your direction, change it slightly, change the offering slightly. What you've got to keep in mind in business, we call this the corridor principle, that you might start off trying to do one thing and end up doing a completely different thing.
Mm.
And that's the corridor principle, that sometimes the ideas evolve as you work and you have to be open-minded to that. And that's what makes great businesses great. That what you thought of as an idea in the beginning might mm-hmm. be too small as you look at what confronts you. Or it might be unviable yeah. as you look at what confronts you.
Right.
You have to be open to both possibilities.
Oh, absolutely. Even though it might come with heartbreak. So what is incubation? How do we define incubation?
It's a very different thing conceptually because it's a burgeoning kind of space
mm-hmm.
where some people think of incubation as some sort of mentorship and perhaps providing shared office space for businesses. And some people do that and they call it incubation.
Yeah.
For me, I want to go back to the origination of the term incubation. You know, the first incubation we know in the world mm-hmm. is when females, women are incubating babies in their tummies,
mm-hmm.
right? To just be polite. And that's what incubation is, carrying
this
thing.
There's nothing wrong with the word womb. It's biological.
Oh,
yes,
okay.
In our uterus. Yes.
I have to, mm-hmm. my mother's listening. So I just really have to watch my words very mm-hmm. carefully. So a woman carries a child in their womb until the child is ready to be birthed onto this world.
Yeah.
And that is what incubation is about. It's about carrying something in a safe environment, in a safe space, until it is ready to be unleashed into the world. So what we find with entrepreneurs is they start and they start confronting an untold amount of challenges
yeah.
as they try to build their businesses. And this can be very daunting at times, understandably, because you are encountering new things. And typically human beings, the human mind works in a very linear way. So
yeah.
when you think one, two, three, I'm going to take A, combine it with B, and it will equal C.
Yes.
And the reality in the world of entrepreneurship is that you take A and then Z comes first. And it's not a sequential follow through of alphabets, right? Things just happen. And it is in that process that you need to understand that you need somebody to guide you who's been there. Let me give you an example. One more example. Sorry. Yeah. If you wanted to be a mechanic, where would you go?
To a workshop
somewhere. That kind of follows, right?
Yes.
If you want to be
where
a nurse, you go to nursing school.
Yes.
Absolutely. You have to go and understudy somebody. You have to go and learn the trade, learn the practice. And mm-hmm. entrepreneurship is no different. It's a trade. It's a practice. It's a methodology. It's a philosophy. It's a way of doing things. Entrepreneurship is about building machinery that generates income.
So have we taken the science out of it?
I think so.
To a large degree, we've made it seem as if it is a coincidence. It is driven by your energy, by your passion and your love, by your persistence, you know,
100%.
To some degree. And then we remove often the science from it.
In fact, all of those things, the energy, the enthusiasm, the passion you have are all accessory
yes.
to what it is that you is at core of what you're trying to do. So the first question to answer, you alluded to this earlier, the first question to answer is, what problem am I trying to solve?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a problem to solve? And even so,
because you could come up with the most useless thing.
Absolutely. So sometimes, I mean, the Americans say, don't fix that which ain't broke, right?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you're trying to fix something that is not broken, that mm-hmm. works perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to try and do different things.
Mm-hmm.
So typically there's two types of entrepreneurs you see. The one is what we call the passion-oriented entrepreneurs. So this is somebody who wants to monetize their passion.
Yeah.
So this is, I've got this passion, I'm passionate about this particular thing, and I want to build a business. And often those entrepreneurs fail fairly quick. Because the passion itself, whilst it's important in the process of building your business, is not necessarily a market.
Mm-hmm.
It's just your passion,
mm-hmm.
right? I've seen so many people with different passions that are not monetizable.
Yeah.
You can't make money out of that passion. It's simple, another story.
Yes.
So you have to be willing to accept that your passion might not be monetizable. Then you see a second type of entrepreneur, the opportunity-oriented entrepreneur. This is somebody who looks at the market and says, well, there's a gap. Now then the question becomes, is there a gap in the market and is there a market in the gap, right? Because yes, there's a gap in the market. There's some need that is not being fulfilled, but is it big enough to create a viable business out of. So absolutely. In other words, is there a gap in that market,
and there is there market a gap in that gap? 100%. Does not mean
there's a market.
That there's a market.
100%. So it's a discipline then to say, well, I've identified the gap, and then to go about the process of saying, let me see if it's monetizable, if I can build a business out of that little niche or that little gap that I've identified.
Yes.
And that is the discipline that I'm talking about. That is the hardest thing.
So at what point should a business go into incubation? At startup? Once we're making 2 million and we're paying our taxes to SARS, like when?
Yeah, so this is what I was trying to allude to, that you've got a continuum of different ideas of incubation.
Right.
You've got people like us who say we will incubate you from when you are born. Mm-hmm. So from the moment you try to start the business, we will help you through the processes that you need to follow in order to build a business. So that at some stage, a year or two into that business, when the ideas are solid, when the market has been established, when you know what it is that you are doing, we can then unleash you to the world. And you can go into the ecosystem that already exists, that's there. You don't need incubation. The ecosystem already exists, and you can trade in that ecosystem, and the ecosystem will assist you with training, with financing, with...
Talk direct, Tep. I want you to talk direct. So there I am in Kahelo Business Hub. And I have an idea. You help me in terms of what I need to do, because I have no idea about what needs to be in place, like SARS, CIPC, and all of the regulatory requirements, right? That I need to register to the bargaining council, depending on the business that I'm in. So you're there to provide a place where I can come and work and push these things forward, right?
100%.
Am I then so now everything is up and running. Do you then, when you say in an ecosystem, do you then connect me with people that I'd be doing business with?
100%. So that's one side of it. So we look at incubation as four different processes. The one part is the governance, which is what you are talking about,
right.
Saying that, well, there's governance, the business is registered, it's formally operating, it's compliant, etc. That all of those pieces are just governance, mm-hmm. which is one part.
Mm-hmm.
And then the issue about linking you to the market is about social capital. So how do we help you to expedite that process of building that social capital,
yeah.
which is your proximity to decision makers or your proximity to the market?
Right.
So how do we get you closer to the market, closer to the decision makers, and help your business to have its customers? So we can help you through that process, but that's part two. Then part three is about financing. What sort of financing structures do you need to have in place? How do you raise money? What kind of money do you raise? Where do you raise that money? All of those questions
yes.
are very unique to the particular business in question, because all businesses are really different.
Absolutely.
So that's piece number three. Then the last part is the human capital. Do you have the right people running the business?
Yeah, because I could be a techie.
That's it.
And not have any business management skills.
Absolutely. So there's two things. So there's technically, well, there's two types of skills that go into every business. The one is management sets of skills,
yeah.
what people talk about as entrepreneurial skills. There's no such a thing. It's management skills, right? So you build a business through management skills. You deploy management skills, and there's no such a thing as entrepreneurial skills. And then you have the technical skills. Who makes the widgets that you're making, and how are they made? So for example, if you're a legal firm,
yeah.
you might have lawyers. The legal firm might be owned by Tsepo Phakathi, who knows, almost use a bad word, who knows nothing about law, but he has a team of lawyers
yeah.
that work.
Yeah.
See, so the difference is I'm running the business end of it
mm-hmm.
and they're running the technical end of it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two things that go into the business, those technical skills and the business management skills. And I would suppose that for me as an entrepreneur, it's always been important to build the management skills, because they are portable. I can take them into any industry and into any space and use them
yes.
there.
Let's pause it there. 100%. Let's pause it there, because we are running off. It's like a train that's just running endlessly.
702 Masterclass.
23 minutes to 3 o'clock. We've been in the throes of today's masterclass, where we are profiling the experience that entrepreneurs can expect when they enter Nedbank Business Ignite. So along with Nedbank, 702 and Kahelo Business Hub are giving away an incubation, or rather in a very intensive tailor-made incubation program to the value of 100,000 rands, as well as airtime, advertising your business, airtime advertising package to the value of 200,000 rand. There are four entry brackets that we will look at. Businesses below 5 million annual turnover, businesses between 5 million and 10 million turnover, and then businesses between 10 million and 20 million annual turnover, and then those over 20 million. So do enter, go to 702.co.za, fill in a form that's there online, and put yourself up to undergo this process, because it could be the spark spark that you need to ignite your business and to propel it and take it into the next level so that you can do that ever important task of creating jobs. We're taking your calls now on 011-883-0702, 31702 for your SMSs, your WhatsApps and your voice notes on 072-702-1702. As we're joined by Tsepo Phakathi, a serial entrepreneur who will be overseeing this incubation process. He's the founder of Kaelo Business Hub and Phakathi Holdings. So we've been talking about incubation and about entrepreneurship. So we'll take your calls in this remaining half hour. Do give us a call with your questions. So Tsepo, often entrepreneurs are itching to go. They're itching to get out there and to realize this idea of theirs. So in that incubation process, it almost means as if they have to almost slow down, slightly slow the pace and stay in moments that could mean improving their businesses, build systems, look at the human capital aspect, be real about financing, be real about the marketplace. Is that a good understanding of what happens?
No, 100%. So when you build a business, it's not a race. Mm. It's a marathon. You want to build longevity in that business. So the idea is to build systems that make that business sustainable over the long term.
Right.
We ourselves in our group, Phakathi Holdings, are going through the same process now. As we're looking at one of our businesses, which is in the education space, and we're saying that, well, we want to build footprint in education. So it's one of those things. We've targeted a particular sector. We think that there's mileage in it and we want to be there because we think we can build a business that in the next 5 years we can flip over mm-hmm. and hand over to somebody else. We don't marry these businesses. We build them to sell them. Mm-hmm. And that's the big idea behind what Phakathi Holdings' philosophy is that in business. So, you know, in order to do that, you need enough time. You mm-hmm. need the entrepreneur to invest the time.
Yeah, because the person who's coming in to buy your business is not buying you. They're buying the value you've created
Absolutely.
In the business, the brand, the systems, the customers, the base that you've created.
100%. And it usually takes 20 years. But it takes 20 years because in the first 5 to 10 years in a business, the entrepreneur is messing around, still really trying to find their footing properly. You might be making money, but the systems are not in place. So without you, the business crumbles. So it takes about 20 years to really truly build something that is at institutional capacity, where you can really say that I can walk away from this business and it will stand.
Right.
So and that's very important.
Yeah. For it to still be able to stand. Yes.
Absolutely.
We have a huge failure rate of businesses in this country. You know, they always talk about the first 3 years being really critical. As we know, even we use the metaphor of a baby developing in the womb and so on, that even in the first 3 months, we don't even say much.
Absolutely.
We don't say anything about what's
yeah.
going on.
Yeah,
so absolutely. That period is critical. So how long should incubation be?
So typically best practice depends on what you are incubating. I mean, if you're incubating government institutions to do research in a big research park, etc.,
yeah.
that incubation process might be small. It might be very project oriented. But typically for small businesses that we are trying to help out of the gutter, you need to be in the incubation process for between 12 months and 3 years. And the idea is we want in the first 12 months, we're just really trying to build the business, the nuts and bolts of it. And then thereafter, we're trying to just build the top layers. Mm-hmm. So just to make sure that it looks good, it functions well, whether you are there or not, things operate seamlessly and you can hand over the business to the management team and people can run without you. It's just trying to get you to that level of understanding and that level of competence. But as with any other thing, it depends on the starting level of competence of the entrepreneur we are incubating, because we don't incubate businesses, we incubate entrepreneurs.
Right.
So we're working with the individual. So if the jockey has a particular level of competence, we start where they are. So somebody with mm-hmm. a relatively high level of competence might not need to be in the process for too long. It just
really
depends.
Someone who's running a business that has 20 million rand turnover is not exactly coming in unskilled or with no knowledge.
You know, Dave, our financial director in a company I used to own years ago, a furniture removal company, the largest actually in Africa, Dave, mm-hmm. financial director, used to say that turnover is vanity, profit is sanity,
yes.
and cash flow is reality. So I think nothing much of turnover. You know, somebody, if you're in mining, for example, 20 million rand is your first set of, you know, you pick and shovel operation can have
yes.
20 million rand turnover. It means absolutely nothing. So it's not the nominal number that really matters. It's what you pull through at the bottom line.
Exactly, because you could have expenses up to
30 million.
Yeah.
Then you're precisely. Making a 10 million rand loss.
Yes, precisely.
Yeah.
Or what's left at the end of the day is just a few cents.
Yeah.
So as you say, turnover is, what was the phrase you used?
Vanity.
Vanity.
Yeah, it's an ego thing.
Yeah. So the key of what you're doing then, or what you would be introducing into a business like that, is what?
So it's just to make sure that the business operates on a sound basis. There's a market. The market is expanding. If the market is not expanding, there are gray areas around your market that you can expand into. So it's not doing a mad thing where you're just expanding radically and out of control. It's a controlled process to say, what are the spaces that you can expand into so that you can enlarge in your market?
Yes.
And that's the understanding. And once you've mastered that process of going from just saying, there's my target market, there's my focus, and there are the gray areas, and I'm expanding into that, offering a slightly varied product or service to that market. And then you master that process.
Mm-hmm.
Then we can hand you over to the market. You are a safe pilot to go and run this business.
Yes. Now, just to take you back to the earlier point that you made about incubation being from 12 months to 3 years, and some of the businesses that you're incubating, the township businesses.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
So from 2016, we set up something called Startup Soweto. So as part of Kaelo, we took our money, went to Soweto, bought a facility, and created the space where entrepreneurs can come and work.
Yeah.
And the big idea for us was we wanted to be very close to township businesses. So in the first year, we worked with 493 businesses, mm-hmm. all artisan businesses. Mm-hmm. So motor mechanic, panel beaters, carpenters, electricians, etc. Because we had a slight theory. So let me take you one step back from that.
Yeah.
The reason I got into business was to create jobs. So my focus and my philosophy in life in general is that business is not an end in itself. It's merely a conduit to an end, and that end is to create jobs.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not creating jobs, you're self-employed. You're not running a business. You're not an entrepreneur. It's a very big distinction.
Right.
You're self-employed, which is great. We need people who are going to be self-employed so they're not a burden to the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But as an entrepreneur, the whole premise of entrepreneurship is to try and create employment.
Mm.
So what our philosophy was in South Africa, you have three layers of unemployment. You've got the first group, which are graduates. So what we call graduate unemployment, that's sitting at about 10% of all the people who are unemployed. So if you've got 10 million people unemployed in South Africa, 1 million of them are graduates. They've got some sort of tertiary qualification.
Yes.
Might be inappropriate, might be a bad qualification, might be a good one. And the market is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a second layer, which is people with a matric, but without any qualification. So that second layer represents about 27% mm-hmm. of the people that are unemployed. So mm-hmm. those two together make up 37%. The other 63% of the people who are unemployed are what we call the unemployable group. They have no skills, no education, no experience, nothing. They bring very little to the table.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea on our part was, we'll let government do the learnerships
graduates
and internships, because that's easy. It's easy pickings. They can go and celebrate, and we can have some quick wins, and we can say, well, these are mm-hmm. easy picking, sort of low hanging fruit, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
What we wanted to do was do the hard work, the slog work, to go and look at the people that are unemployable. And so we went to the township and we identified 493 businesses, and we worked with 493 businesses from 2016 to last year.
Yeah.
And through those businesses, we're able to create 976, just shy of 1,000 new jobs, other than sustaining the existing jobs and, and those businesses, through our process of incubation, which was a two-step process. The first one is wanted to layer a very good foundation of understanding of certain principles in business. For example, if you are a mechanic, you cannot say to people that, well, you know, bring your car and I'll fix everything. You can't. You just don't have the skills. You can't fix everything. So one of the key principles was specialize in something, whether a brand or a particular part of the motor vehicle, etc. And in that way, it's what Adam Smith purported years ago in saying that the division of labor is what gets you productive. So if you focus on one thing, you're able to get those economies of scale, that division of labor, that specialization, invaluable. So we're able to get a lot of businesses to do that. And we help them with other basic principles, like there's a difference between what you receive in income and what the business receives in income and what your profit looks like, etc. So we spent the first month just layering those foundational stuff. And thereafter, we spent the next 3 years that ensued from 2016 to the end of 2018, really worrying ourselves about that these businesses are growing, tracking them. Also on our side, building institutional capacity.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Building that ecosystem on our side and building our own capacity and competence and capability to manage the process.
Right.
Because our ultimate view was, we want to be in 20 different townships. And we want to do at least 1,000 businesses in each township, in each township each year.
And replicate so that goal. With the number of jobs. We do have to take a break. Put your headphones on. Letlo Honolo has been listening in. He's got a question before we do that. Hi, Letlo Honolo.
Hello, how is it?
Good, welcome.
Look, I want to ask Tepo a quick question.
Yeah.
Now I'm in mining sector.
Mm-hmm.
And as you just said, that in mining sector, sometimes your profits are paying marginal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to ask you, as an incumbent, how do you balance headcount versus, you know, we know that in our country we have lack of productivity. And that affects small businesses.
Listen, just speak properly into the mouthpiece, please. We're struggling to hear you. So how do you balance headcount?
How do you balance headcount versus the productivity that, I mean, the lack of productivity that we're suffering versus, you know, a healthy cash flow? How do you balance these two?
Okay, all right. Do you understand? Could you have a question for Letlo Honolo?
No.
All right. Letlo Honolo, thank you for the question. He's out in Delmas. How do you do that?
So it's very funny. We were having this conversation yesterday with the team about China.
Mm-hmm.
And I was saying to the team, one of the biggest problems in South Africa is that you don't have productivity. So if you want to get economic growth, the fastest way to get economic growth is not investment. It's actually productivity.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get productivity? Productivity is a function of the capacity and the innate competencies that the people that work for you have. 100%. So if you want to make your people more productive, you've got to train them. So the way to balance it so that you don't have runaway headcount
mm-hmm.
is to make your people better. And you make your people better by being relentless in training. The more you train them,
that's
the more
true.
Competent they become and the more productive they can become.
And so investing in the systems they need that will enable
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely. So you couple that with technology. So
right.
you use both
yes.
training to increase competence, put new technologies in place, but even just training on its own.
Mm.
As a practical first step, you just train your people to be better at their jobs and they can be better and you turn things around quickly and they can be more productive.
Yes, I can vouch for that. We did not have training in our businesses except the training we provided until we created a system that they would use to train, to refresh, to constantly update themselves. And now it's literally something that they do every 2 weeks and it's for every single member in the business, not just isolated to front-facing or customer-facing staff. It's
absolutely.
For back room, in any other function, in fact. So they all participate. They all get scores. It's not something that they're punished for or whatever, but we know the areas of improvement that we need to focus on with every individual. And now you have the comfort that when you're not there,
absolutely.
You have adequately trained staff. You
100%.
Know? And all those the wastage. The losses that you would experience from maybe a customer not taking up the service because of what they were met with are minimized. You know, it's not to say that they're not ever going to happen, but they're minimized. Right, Scarab was saying we must take a break now. So we'll have just under 10 minutes after the break with Tsepo Phakathi. What questions do you have for your business? What would you like to know about incubation? Because we are now in the throes of the Nedbank Business Ignite competition, where the winner will be announced on the 4th of July. And during the week of the 24th of June to the 28th of June, we'll be hearing from the selected entrepreneurs. And then, of course, there will be an intense judging process to see who will win an intensive tailor-made incubation program to the value of 100,000 rand and on-air advertising to the value of 200,000 rand.
702 Masterclass.
It's now 6 minutes to three. I can't believe how time has flown. My goodness. And we're spending this hour, this masterclass on incubation and entrepreneurship with Tsepo Phakathi, the founder of Gaelo Business Hub and Phakathi Holdings. Gesi and Samrand, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. Welcome, Gesi.
Thank you so much. So I just want to ask Tsepo, I'm at the incubation hub in Renaissance.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the biggest thing is that when you sign up, and especially for this new intake in partnership with 702 and NetBank,
mm-hmm.
when you sign up, they promise you the moon and the stars, okay? And then towards end of the term, well, even before the 3 years end, it's almost like we don't necessarily feel the support, and that's where we need it the most.
Mm.
It's not just in the beginning. What happens throughout the period, do you understand? So I just want to ask him, how is he going to ensure that the intake now is
yes.
really going to benefit from day one up until the end of 3-year mark?
Yes.
because that's the issue we're having.
Yes, I know. I think the point that you raise is so critical, and Tapo touched on it at the start to say incubation is not a space or real estate with an executive suite. It has to be so much more. So incubation has failed, and it does fail. What leads to that, and how do you ensure that, Tapo?
So, you'll notice that in the competition, it says an intensive tailor-made incubation program.
Right.
Because the idea is to tailor-make it to the businesses that we are incubating. And for the purpose of this 702 program, it'll be only two entrants that will be lucky enough to be part of this program. It is not a cheap program. We will not be providing office space to them. It's not about that.
Yeah.
The incubation is about taking those businesses from where they are to the next level by helping them to heighten their growth. And we achieve that through strengthening those four areas that I alluded to earlier: the governance, the human capital, the social capital, and the financial capital.
Yeah.
So we have a structured program of what this business needs to do based on the objectives of the owners and the current capacity that the business can handle.
So is it a question of this plan, this program for the duration of that period not being properly managed?
100% or designed even.
Designed, so, yes.
Yeah,
and then on the other side, do you get entrepreneurs who expect you to hold their hand or to now do the work of the business ideas and so on, the slog, the sweat, the blood and so on for them?
Yeah, so what we need to clarify in the beginning is, what are your objectives? What are your goals? And the entrepreneur says, these are the goals, these are the time frames. And then we design a plan based on those goals and those time frames. And then we know what they are going to do. So the doing part is the easy part. And we clarify that this is what they are going to do.
Right.
What we are there to do is unlock the things when they come across, when they suddenly hit these invisible walls, when they come across these stumbling blocks, we are there for that purpose, to try and help them through those difficult and those nuances and those trying times in the process of trying to get
there. So what, sometimes you're close and sometimes you're not?
Yeah, 100%, 100%.
Depending on what is going on.
It's a very structured program.
What you're driving.
You know, where we check in regularly on a weekly basis. We check in, we eyeball each other on a monthly basis. We know what is happening in the business. We know what needs to be unlocked. We can make the phone calls with our entrepreneur doesn't get there, etc.
I see. And there's accountability. You hold them accountable.
100%.
In Kessie's case, she's saying, well, it's hard to hold the incubator accountable.
Well, the incubator is accountable because at the end of the day, if you're not satisfied with the results, you can just vote with your feet.
Right. True that. Whew, okay. That was a marathon. Was it a sprint? Anyway, thank you so much, Tepa. We'll be putting this up as a podcast, as so many of you have requested. We're looking forward to the NetBank Ignite competition that's currently on. And there's still time for you to enter your business. The rules are all there on 702.co.za.